Is this just a weight that...
What we're doing here is unpacking a box of material that dates back to the undergraduate days of Oliver Smithies. And the first thing that we're looking at is a box of film, which is probably not worth looking too much at, but it's dated November, December... 58, and these are films taken actually probably during the research period and not the period that the book is concerned with. I think we'll forget about that. I think it's not really terribly worthwhile worrying about. We're going to unpack the box layer by layer. The first package that we come across is a collection of cards, which are abstracts of probably extracts from notations from quarterly reviews, a sort of abstracting system that was used by investigators who were trying to search the literature. Is this light on?
The light is on.
Yes, so, okay, the first one is G.S. Hartley, as it says, not very important. We'll turn them over. I'm having difficulty holding this. You turn them over, Jenny. Right, and put it on top of it. Nothing notable in this. Here's another abstract from Comte Rondieu, Carlsberg. Go ahead, Jenny. And have various interactions, just a notation of something that was looked at. Nothing very notable. Here again, some references. They're really rather unintelligible at this point. Here is something on done and equilibrium, which was important in my thesis problem. So it's probably dating back to thesis time. That's even by Donnan himself. Yes, go ahead, Jenny. Various notations of articles read primarily in relation to the work I was doing for my thesis. So that bunch of cards is dates back to the time when I was doing research for my thesis.
These are not bound like these.
No, but that's this is the next one we come across is notes on a lecture by Sandy Ogston, who was my thesis advisor and undergraduate advisor. This goes back probably to the time when I was an undergraduate, and his notes on a lecture given by him on pH and making sure that one understood what pH really meant. It's quite a nice summary of what was being taught at that time and still completely relevant even today. That's the pH, A.G. Oxton document. The next document is lecture notes from a course given by Bowen, and I don't even remember what his other name was, on the absorption of light and atomic structure, so gives some idea of what was being taught at that time about light and interaction with molecules. And we're flicking through a few pages. It talks about the state of electrons under different circumstances and absorption of light. Quite a nice series of notes and completely understandable at the time, though I must say I would have difficulty understanding it now. But the notes are quite good notes, and they go on for probably 20 pages. The next one we come to is clearly notes from lectures given by, again, by Hoxton. This was during the time that I was still an undergraduate, working towards my bachelor's degree, honours bachelor's degree in animal physiology. And Sandy Hoxton came back at that time and taught various things that nowadays we would think are related to molecular biology. And here he was talking about some physical principles in biochemistry, a title which really is very much at the heart of what he, how he thought and what he taught about, that you had to understand the physical chemical aspects of the chemistry of the body. So he's talking about thermodynamics can define the possibilities of a reactions taking place, since it's concerned with the distribution of energy in systems. In other words, he was saying you can't make something happen unless you provide energy for it to happen, and talked about the ways that energy is described. There's actually free energy, and he talked about the conservation of energy and the entropy of a system, which at that time was still rather a difficult concept for me, but later became clearer that nowadays we think of entropy as being the order of the system, or the disorder rather of the system. So all systems tend to become, go from an ordered state to a disordered state if they can change. Entropy increases as disorder increases, and this is him lecturing about that. And I'll turn over the pages, and he talks about osmotic pressure, which was later the topic of my thesis. So he's deriving the equations for osmotic pressure. Several pages of this. He's considering, for example, on one page he's considering a situation where there is a mixture of a solution of sugar, sucrose, in water, and in equilibrium with water itself, with a boundary between them, a membrane between them which is impermeable to sucrose. So it's not an easy concept at first, but in the end quite easy, that if you have water mixed with sucrose, the concentration of the water is lower than the concentration of water when it's in pure water. So water is at a lower concentration, and if water can pass through the membrane, it will pass from the higher concentration into the lower concentration in the sucrose water mixture, and that will happen and can be opposed by applying a pressure, and that pressure to prevent the dilution of the sucrose solution by water is the osmotic pressure. And that became my thesis problem. He talks about that being relevant to lymphatic system and various other things of that type. The lecture is, my notes of the lecture are quite extensive, so it was obviously important to me. Energy of cellular metabolism, he's talking about, later became part of the first scientific article on which I was an author. Notice I don't say which I wrote. I was an author on the paper, but Sandy wrote the paper out of some discussion that arose during our meetings. Are we going to bind this set of notes into a little binding? many pages of it. Surprised that this must have been a series of lectures. Yes, because here it starts again on page one. Now it's talking about the equilibrium constant and free energy. Free energy being the work that you can get from a particular system. We'll rebind these. I'm going to stop the recording now. The next set of notes is from Hinchelwood. He was a professor of physical chemistry and had a lot to do with teaching principles of reaction rates and so on. I think I'm not mistaken here. Maybe he got the Nobel Prize, I'm not certain. But notes on chemical equilibrium, thermodynamical approach. I was very interested in thermodynamics. The next package is Hinchelwood lecturing on the rate of chemical changes. It's rather interesting to me because the first lecture I ever gave in relation to chemistry was given in the University of Toronto, I think, in a course taught by Charles Haynes, Professor C.S. Haynes, H-A-N-E-S. And I remember this lecture very well, giving it, because there was a sun shining through the window and I could see the shadow, my shadow on the wall. And I remember being so nervous that I could watch this shadow talking while I was giving the lecture. It was a pretty out-of-body experience, but I was actually lecturing on material that's covered by this set of lecture notes from the rate of chemical change by Hinchelwood. The next page is actually a final examination for my undergraduate honours degree in animal physiology, and it's a copy of the final examination in... Oh no, it's the chemistry one. I took the chemistry one after physiology, so that... let me backtrack. I did an honours degree in animal physiology, in which I got a first class honours, and then I joined the second and third year of the chemistry degree, bachelor's degree, and this is one of the final examination papers, and I'm curious to see what it said, and the date is 22nd of June 1948, a day before my 24th birthday. The exam was a practical exam, as you can see. If you read it, you're provided with material and expected to investigate the parameters of the hydrolysis of choline esters. And you also had to investigate and identify substance C. And that's an interesting element. I don't remember what substance C was. Although I don't remember what C was, I remember one examination prompted by my undergraduate friends Jeffrey Thomas and Tubby Bernstein, who were undergraduates in Balliol, a year more senior than me, and had worked out the best way to do organic chemistry in the medical school was not to follow the usual recipe, but was to identify all substances by three simple tests. taste, smell, and appearance. And I had one final exam chemical that I had to identify, which was a rather oily looking, or rather like glycerol. It looked like glycerol, but it smelt of caramel and tasted acidic. And I thought that with a caramel smell, it must have something to do with carbohydrate and acidic. Well, what's a common oil, glycerol-like substance that comes from sugars? And I thought it might be lactic acid, and I did the confirmatory test for lactic acid, and I was out of the exam in 10 minutes. And the next package is notes on lectures by Bell, Ronnie Bell, R.P. Bell. He was the chemistry tutor in Balliol College and was a very rigorous chemist. I don't know what he's lecturing on at this point, lecturing on the energy of solutions. It's a long series of lectures going on for many pages. I remember having one of my early tutorials with Ronnie Bell. He'd asked me to write an essay on the Pauli exclusion principle and the periodic table, and I had had a grand time writing my weekly essay on this topic, which is an absolutely fascinating topic in its first right. And I got halfway down the first page of my essay, and Ronnie found that I didn't understand what I'd written, and I couldn't justify the statements that I've written, so we never got beyond the first page, where he made it very clear that you never write down anything that you can't justify and anything that you don't understand. And the next one we come across is Physiology, Oxygen and Carbon Dioxide Transport, and it's labelled Old Smithy. So I think it must have been one of my weekly essays. I don't quite know what it is, but we'll read it and see. And the notes that I've written, when I review them, were really quite good. The next one is continuing notes on Ronnie Bell's, these are notes on Ronnie Bell's lecture on the kinetics of solution reactions. They're quite extensive, many pages, so it must have been several lectures. The following package contains notes on a series of articles that I read in relation to the importance of phosphate compounds and energy metabolism. It is a very important package for me because it includes one paper that I remember perhaps better than any other paper that I ever read as being equivalent to opening a new book in one's life. Perhaps as I go through them, this will become more obvious. The first article is is by Macfarlane, published in 1939, on the phosphorylation of carbohydrate in living cells. And a second paper, also by Macfarlane, on changes in phosphate distribution during anaerobic glycolysis in brain slices. Another paper is talking about the inhibition of glycolysis by Gemmill, 1939. Carbohydrate metabolism in the embryo by Needham, 1937. One on the function of phosphate in cellular simulations, 1942, by Kalkar, talking about the coupling of phosphorylation with fermentation and respiration. A preface to understanding why phosphate is involved in the metabolism of carbohydrates and indeed of all biological substances. This collection of articles and my notes on them has one article which I consider, as I mentioned, to be the most important article that I ever read in terms of enjoyment. It is an article by Fritz Lippmann in Advances of Enzymology, 1942, Volume 1, page 99. Metabolic generation and utilization of phosphate bond energy. In this article, Lippmann introduces to me the concept of energy-rich phosphate and the importance of energy-rich phosphate in metabolism and changing energy, low energy phosphate compounds, for example phosphate esters, into high energy compounds, phosphate anhydrides. ATP is a phosphate anhydride, two phosphate anhydride groups and one phosphoester group, so it has two high energy phosphates and one low energy phosphate. And this book by this article by Lippmann is so deep in my mind that I remember what the book looked like, where I was when I read the book, and the feeling that it had. I even remember what the type was like. It was one of those revelations that occur in a young scientist's life. There are a bunch of papers starting with the yellow enzymes, chapter 13, Sumner and Summers, in enzymes, just a review of reading some papers. This package contains what is almost certainly an essay written for the weekly meeting with my tutor. I don't know, almost certainly with Sandy Oxton during my physiology training. It talks about cellular oxidation and its application to carbohydrate metabolism. It is primarily a discussion of Krebs cycle, one of Krebs' early cycles, maybe not the final one. It's sort of interesting to read, but obviously dated. The next package is a complete change in topic. I'm now obviously under the direction of under the direction of Professor Witteridge, David Witteridge, a neurobiologist, and these are notes on various papers related to the central nervous system, a fairly substantial package of notes from the literature. Uh, The following package contains what are almost certainly two of the weekly essays that one would write for one's tutor in response to some topic assigned the week before. So one of them is answering the question, how far have studies of behaviour contributed to the study of the physiology of the cortex? And that is the question that I was asked to answer, and the essay that follows is what I wrote in response to it. Begins with, the study of behaviour is a science which would appear at first sight to be ideal for investigation of the physiology of the cortex, etc. And the second essay is on the bearing of studies of behaviour on problems of localisation of function in the central nervous system. And again, an essay, a weekly essay. This package contains notes on a few papers related to the sensation of pain. And detection of a painful stimuli. I remember having to write a weekly essay on the topic. One of the items which came up, I don't know whether I can find the references for it, was a description of an animal in early phases of evolution, which the investigator described as, or called, a protopathic animal, an animal which had a very primitive ability to detect anything other, basically anything other than pain. Versus later evolutionary stages where the animals had evolved to the stage that they were so-called epicritic animals and could distinguish things like colour and sound and various much more sophisticated things. One author wrote criticism of this idea that there was a protopathic animal. And I remember quite a lot of what he said, because it was in one complete sentence, which I can't reproduce completely, but started off like this. He's referring to the protopathic animal. Such an animal, if it could propagate its bewildered kind, which appears doubtful, could respond to which, in response to a stimulus which it could not understand, from a stimulating agent whose nature it had no means of determining, could only respond by curling up and micturating. I remember learning that by heart, because it was one sentence, an incredibly structured sentence describing his opinion of the protopathic animal. I'll try it again. Such an animal, if it could propagate its bewildered kind, which appears doubtful, could have little survival value, for in response to a stimulus which it could not understand, from a stimulating agent whose nature it had no means of determining, could only respond by curling up and micturating. I almost got it right. A change in topic, here are some notes on blood coagulation. Then an essay on, for a weekly essay, I assume again, on the possible structure of haemoglobin. These are identified always because they'll have some title, and my name, O. Smithers, will be on the right-hand side. So this is physiology on the left, O. Smithers on the right, number one, and the possible structure of haemoglobin is the title of the essay. The next several packages are weekly tutorial essays in the nervous system time of my career when David Witteridge was my tutor.